Welcome to the BBB National Programs Podcast, Better Series, where we will explore top-of-mind topics and self-regulation with business and industry leaders. Together, we seek to understand the leading trends and innovations that continue to push the envelope in today's marketplace.
Thank you for joining us today on the Better Series Podcast. I'm James Lee. One of the burning questions at the end of 2018 was pretty simple and straightforward. The number of data breaches from cyber attacks was down for the first time in more than 5 years. So here's the question. Had we finally hit the peak of a decade-long trend of ever-increasing data breaches? So let's fast forward to today, and we now know the answer. No. We are on pace to set a new all-time high in data breaches and perhaps the number of records exposed as a result. What's more, cyber attacks are now the cause of a little more than half of all data breaches. The other half is almost evenly split between malicious insiders and humans making mistakes. The smallest source of data breaches is actually system failures. October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, so it seemed like a good time to tell a few horror stories and look at what can be done to help business leaders avoid becoming a headline. Joining us today are two industry leaders with deep knowledge of how the bad guys want to separate your company from your data and treasure. James Ruotolo is a senior director in the Fraud and Security Intelligence Business Unit of SAS, the world's largest private software company. And John LaCour is the chief technology officer and founder of Fish Labs, a company whose products help businesses avoid becoming a victim of a phishing, with a PH, expedition. So, James, John, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, James.
John, we're going to start with you, and let's start by asking the obvious. That light at the end of the cybersecurity tunnel, is that sunshine or is that a train? And will we ever see a day when cyber attacks are rare?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think so. Part of the problem is that technology changes so quickly now that even if we make progress in one area, there are always new avenues for bad guys to exploit us. And when you really think about where these problems come from, most cyber attackers are doing it for the money. It's really a social and economic problem. There's just some people that live in parts of the world where there are good internet connections, but poor prospects for getting a good job. So I think it's here to stay, but the nature of it will change over time.
James, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, even in 2018, as you referenced, when the number of breaches actually went down, the number of exposed records was up 126% in the same period. So the fact that the breaches went down is a bit of a misnomer. The risk is still there and growing. And as you mentioned, as we've seen so far this year in 2019, the evidence suggests that those breaches are continuing to rise. And I think as we see with the Internet of Things and more connected devices, those are just more and more targets for hackers to steal useful information that can compromise identities and our accounts. So I think, unfortunately, we're going to continue to see this problem increase.
Back in 2006, I joined the board of the Identity Theft Resource Center, and James, you serve on that board today. The number one source of ID crimes at the time was stolen mail out of the mailbox at the corner of your yard, and dumpster diving at businesses, where people would go in and try to find business records in a dumpster and steal information from that. Now, today, as we've talked about, it is cyber attacks that are often used to create something we now call synthetic IDs. So, James, what exactly is a synthetic ID, and what do business leaders need to know about it?
Great question, James. So the consulting firm McKinsey has indicated that synthetic identity theft or identity fraud is actually the fastest growing type of financial crime in the United States right now. So if folks haven't heard about it, they really need to know what it is. And synthetic identity is effectively where scammers take a piece of real identifying information, typically a social security number, and usually take that from someone who's not active in the credit system. Often those would be children, homeless, or elderly folks who maybe don't have traditional banking relationship. And they take that real piece of identifying information and combine it with fake information, like a name that they've made up, an address and date of birth. And they combine those things to create an entirely new synthetic person. So in the system, in the data, actual Social Security number is now tied to some bogus information. And they use those identities to create new accounts. So they get loans or credit cards. They then go through a series of steps to try and improve the credit profile of that new person that they've created. In some cases, they actually work with fake business accounts that get set up and then have those fake identities transact with the fake businesses to improve their credit profile. And the goal here at the end of the day is to gain as much credit as possible, charge it all the way up, and then bust out, basically run away without repaying. And take the proceeds of the crime. And what's really challenging about synthetic identity fraud is that it looks like a legitimate credit loss in the data. In fact, there's some research that suggests 20% of what's currently accounted as a credit loss by a business or a financial institution is actually the result of synthetic identity fraud. And some of the traditional fraud detection methods that we use to try and stop certain types of fraudulent behavior, things like knowledge-based authentication, where you'll ask somebody for some information about their background or their history or that only they would know. Those approaches don't work in this case because the fraudster has created the identity and has all of the answers to all of those questions. So some of the typical fraud detection methods are not really effective at stopping this type of fraud.
Yeah, John, I want to bring you into this conversation. So if synthetic ID is a growing an emerging threat that is clearly already here, I want to ask, does that play into phishing in any way? Because that tends to be where you're actually spoofing something. You're taking something legitimate and you're making it yourself look like a member of that legitimate business. And the FBI just issued a report that said that businesses have lost $26 billion since the last 3 years. Because of business email compromise, BEC, which is a form of phishing. So walk us through how this synthetic ID issue and this business email compromise issue are affecting businesses.
Yes, yeah, so, they work a little bit differently, but there's certainly some common threads between them. So with synthetic ID fraud, scammers are looking to use pieces of real information about individuals and then use that as a starting point for their scams. And so you have to ask, well, how are they getting pieces of legitimate information? And phishing is certainly one attack vector that can and is used. Another one is data breaches of information that's been compromised and then put out on the dark web for sale, for example. So both real legitimate issues. In the case of business email compromise, it's one of the largest, has one of the largest impacts in terms of financial losses these days. And the way this typically happens is the attacker will send a spoofed email that looks like it's coming from typically or usually the CEO of a company. And it's directed to the CFO or the financial controller. And usually it's just a one sentence, two sentence email initially saying something like, are you in the office now? And then if the bad guys get a response back, then they'll send another message directing that that person to send a wire transfer of sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, $26 billion is a huge number, but some of these financial losses are in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. So BEC fraud and that type of phishing is a huge problem.
You'd think they'd just like get up and walk down the hall and say, here, send this money. But apparently this really is a huge issue. James, I want to switch back to you because now building on this concept of what it is that's affecting business today, another thing that is a consequence of phishing sometimes is ransomware. And we've seen a lot of headlines around ransomware. Haven't seen as many headlines around synthetic identity. Haven't seen as many headlines around BEC. But ransomware gets a lot of attention. How difficult is that to detect and block, and is it possible to prevent it, and how do those dynamics play into a business that's trying to do, you know, a thousand other things, and then, you know, they get their data compromised and locked up by a data hostage taker?
Yeah, it's an unfortunate reality for companies today that they have to deal with ransomware. And so it's become an incredibly effective way for hackers to generate funds. And I think folks may be familiar with the concept. You know, you may have heard about it all over the news, where the hacker installs some malicious software on your system and then encrypts all of your data and basically has it blocked. And so the only way to unlock it effectively is to pay the ransom. And, you know, that we've seen it target hospitals, municipalities, schools, and small businesses are all typical targets of ransomware attacks. And, you know, in many cases, there are organizations that have critical data. And, you know, if a hospital doesn't have access to patient records, you know, or a municipality can't run a local government without access to their computer system. So we see that as a significant challenge. And, you know, the answer is actually not all that complicated, and it starts with what I describe as good cyber hygiene. And so it's some of the basic things. You know, make sure that you patch all of your systems regularly. Make sure that you keep your antivirus software up to date. You know, use a decent firewall. All very basic things, and perhaps the most important is to keep regular backups of your data. Make sure that you have a system or a process to back up your information, so that if you do suffer a ransomware attack, you have some options. You can go back and return to and restore your backups, and maybe only be missing your data for a day or a week, you know, as opposed to never having access to it again. And for organizations that haven't done a good job with their cyber hygiene, kept up with that, perhaps the only viable path is to pay the ransom. The reality is that the bad guys know that they usually charge a somewhat reasonable dollar amount for the ransom, such that it's probably cheaper to just pay it and unlock your data than it would be to go through some of the efforts to decrypt. And so, you know, it's an unfortunate situation, and I don't like to negotiate with the bad guys, but you know, for some organizations, that tends to be the only option that's viable.
Yeah, I think you get back to some of those headlines. The city of Baltimore was probably the most recent example, where they spent $18 million to restore their systems, which are still not completely restored. And yet the ransomware attackers were only asking for like $50,000. And of course, they were asking a Bitcoin.
If you're making a business decision, it's really pretty straightforward. Unfortunately, you know, business is not the only consideration here. And so, but the reality is, you need to take the steps beforehand in terms of prevention, making sure you have good backups, making sure you have updated and patched systems in order to try and avoid these types of risks going forward.
So, John, we touched on phishing, and we talked about business email compromise, but phishing today is so much more than email. You know, there's social media, there's websites. If somebody's trying to stay ahead of the phishing game, what do they need to be doing? What do they need to be looking at?
Yeah, that's right. We tend to think of phishing attacks as scams that are coming in over email, but more and more we're seeing attacks delivered over social media and other channels. Cyber criminals sometimes will make fake profiles for companies and then spoof their customer service department or even create fake profiles for their executives and spoof them. So I think the lesson is you need to kind of turn on your spidey sense, not just when you're looking at new emails, but anywhere that you're online. You know, and also one of the things to think about is what sort of information are you sharing on your social media accounts? We've seen some of the more sophisticated attacks leverage information that they learn about people and then work that into their scams, which helps make them look more realistic and may cause you to become victims. So think about if you're oversharing personal information and lock down those accounts so not everything that is you post there is being shared publicly.
Last question for both of you, and John, you can go first, but you know, it's October. It's almost Halloween. So if this were the ghost story, we'd now at this point reveal that the sound of the ghost is just the wind, or the light on the railroad tracks is swamp gas. But these are real issues with real consequences. But there's also real solutions. So what should business leaders be doing every day to make sure their business is protected?
Great question. So, you know, at Fish Lab, we detect thousands of phishing attacks every day. And what we find is that technology, the hardware and software security solutions that you buy, they do a good job and they block most of the attacks, but there's still some that slip through. And when they're successful, it's almost always because people are tricked into helping the bad guys, either by clicking a link, opening a malicious file they shouldn't open, or taking some other action that basically opens the doors for the bad guys. So business leaders, they need to be investing more in security awareness and training programs for their employees to help close that gap that technology leaves behind. And I think that's where perhaps there's underinvestment in some organizations.
So, James, you get the last word.
Two recommendations. One would be kind of the cyber hygiene that I referenced earlier. Certainly important to do all of those things. The second one that perhaps doesn't get as much attention is to have a program around addressing security for vendors and contractors. So more and more organizations are outsourcing services to third parties, and we've seen that be a threat vector that's a major factor in data breaches. And the now infamous Target breach, for example, involved the theft of some credentials to access systems through a third-party contractor that they were using. And so many times those third parties get access to very sensitive systems, and organizations don't always subject those contractors to the same types of security and scrutiny that they do for their employees, and they really should. So at a bare minimum, those third parties should be subjected to the exact same types of due diligence and screening that you would, you know, have in place for your own employees in your organization. So critical factor.
James Rotolo of SAS, John LaCour of Fish Labs, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, James.
And thank you for listening to the BBB National Programs Better Series. Don't miss an episode by subscribing to the Better Series by visiting our website, bbbprograms.org. Then click on the podcast tab. You'll find all of our episodes right there, so you can listen on your Apple Podcast app or your favorite streaming platform.
You just enjoyed the Better Series podcast. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To learn more about our other shows, visit betterbusiness.blueberry.com. That's betterbusiness.blueberry.com. Follow us on Twitter at @BBB_NTL programs. Send your comments and ideas to podcast@BBBNP.org. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB National Programs or its affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Blueberry's Terms of Service.